Greetings, this is Reverend Juliet Nightingale, and welcome to this transmission of Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. This is a program centered on near-death, out-of-body, and similar spiritually transformative experiences and related topics, including what people should know about the dying process, the many facets of after-death communications, living interdimensionally and being multisensory, intuition and telepathy, and more. We feature special guests who are both experiencers and researchers in the realm of NDEs and related topics. You are welcome to call in to make comments or ask questions during the show, and the telephone numbers are located on the index page of the website for bbsradio.com. There are a myriad of services, support, and resources available through our organization Toward the Light, not the least of which is this wonderful radio broadcast that takes place live every week. We'd like to encourage you to make a donation to help support this organization and the special work that we are doing. For more information, please visit towardthelight.org and also our media website, towardthelight.info. This week, I am very pleased to have someone whom I regard as a very special soul and friend, a fellow near-death experiencer and one who's written a brilliant dissertation on near-death experiences and the profound love that is experienced in the near-death state. Please welcome to Toward the Light, Anne Frances Ellis. Welcome, Anne. Wonderful to have you on.
Thank you, Juliet.
And how are you?
I am good.
Well,
but I have to say, I'm not a near-death experiencer. I'm a mystical experiencer.
Oh, you've had a mystical experience. Okay,
yeah.
I apologize.
So I don't want to claim to be more knowledgeable than I am.
Well, indeed, though, as has been pointed out a number of times, the spiritually transformative experience is just as valid and meaningful and impacting as the near-death experience, I would venture to say. Of course, I've had both. And so let's get into a little history about your work, because like myself, you are a member of the International Association for Near-Death Studies, and you facilitate a local support group in your area. And tell us where you are again, in Oklahoma, USA, somewhere.
Yes, I live in Tahlequah, Oklahoma, where the Cherokee Nation is headquartered.
Okay.
And our support group is in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Okay. And you've been doing a lot of academic study, and I understand correctly, it was recently that you completed a dissertation.
That's correct.
Okay. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that, but also, you know, what got you into IANS? Maybe we should back up a little bit and ask you about your experience that you had and what catapulted you into joining IANS.
Well, I always like to start before I began working on the dissertation, because I was going along in life thinking that I understood what life was all about. Until, at the age of 32, I was seeking, through different religious organizations, to find a deeper relationship with God. And on one occasion, I was praying in this little chapel during a early morning service, and I opened my eyes and looked up, and I felt that I never saw, like, a whole river of love flowing into me, and it just kept coming. And my logical mind thought, how am I going to describe this? I know it's coming from outside of me into me, but that's all I can really say. And I felt my heart open, and eventually it came to a halt. I don't remember the ending of it. And the service eventually ended, and I got up and I got my pocketbook and I walked out and never said a word to anyone about it for over 25 years. But I noticed while I was driving to work that I felt love for everyone that I saw on the street, total strangers in a different part of the Washington, D.C. area that I lived in. And the colors were brighter and different things like that, which made it even more difficult to explain what had happened to me. So I really didn't understand, but I kept seeking a connection with God.
And was this the same day of your experience, or was this afterwards, like a day or a few days later?
I know the same day as the experience, I felt the love for the people that I was driving by. I don't recall that that very day, colors were brighter. But I did, within the week, notice that also. And I could always get it back, as I call it, by driving my car and looking up towards the sky. And then I would feel that love again and that love connection between me and something that seemed to be up there and out there. And I loved that feeling. I felt like everything was okay while I was feeling that. And that's really what led me to write about profound love as revealed by near-death experiences. I felt that this love was something that the more we know about, the better we can function as the divine beings that we are.
That's a very good point right there, too. It's one that people really, really, really need to hear and remember, because indeed we are divine beings.
Yes, now, I noticed that even when I started working with this material, that it was hard to remember if I got away from it, that I really needed to read some of this material every day to remind myself how sacred I am and everything else is. It was difficult to hold on to that. You can't just get it once and have it. It's losable very easily sometimes.
Now, it's interesting because it seems that, if I'm understanding you correctly, the love was localized that you experienced, and you know, above you, for example, when you looked into the sky, rather than permeating all around you, is that correct?
Definitely when it was coming into me, especially that first day, it felt like about a foot and a half diameter or a foot diameter stream flowing into me, through the wall, into my heart. And so that was very localized. The using the vision raised upward to get that sensation back, that remembrance of all the feelings and everything, all the comfort that came with that love, was facilitated by raising my eyes up again, which they actually had been raised up when it originally occurred.
That is a very interesting experience, because I want to stress that they are all valid, and we never know how something like this might manifest itself. And I think in a lot of ways, it can depend on the individual, how open one is, how ready one is to have such experiences. But I sense that once you experience the love permeating your being, that it did somewhat feel like it was everywhere. Is that correct?
Yes, yes. Or that I was so full of it that it was overflowing from me to everything around me.
And then you also felt a profound sense of peace during this experience.
Yes, yes. Very comforted, like everything was okay. I didn't have to change anything. I didn't have to do anything. I didn't have to be any different from the way I was. Everything was fine.
Well, that's a really important point there, too, because I remember during my near-death state, having the same knowing that everything was exactly the way that it should be, and that everything was taken care of. There's no sense of fear or worry, which is, it's really profound to be completely void of fear.
Oh, that's a good way to put it, Juliet. And I hadn't said it that way before. But when you're totally filled with love, there's no room for fear.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think it is important to stress this, that, you know, so many people are saying, dang, I hope I don't have to be on the verge of death or to die in order to have such an experience. No, one needn't do. And in fact, we were going to have Nancy Clark on this evening to talk about this, because she's doing a project. She's wanting to hear from people who have not had near-death experiences, but who have had experiences like yours and spiritually transformative experiences, out-of-body experiences, near-death-like experiences, all the myriads of names that they are called, because we also need to get the word out there that these experiences are just as valid as having the near-death experiences.
Yes, and I appreciate your stressing that each one is different. For my dissertation, I read 480 experiences. Most were profound near-death experiences. Some were less profound. In other words, the person was out of their body. They could look around. They could see things happening. But they never went into the light and experienced all the things in that other dimension. They were still in the earthly dimension. And some weren't even near-death experiences. They said, I don't really know what happened to me. I was just sitting there, or I was meditating, and this happened to me. But they had just as profound an experience many times as the near-death experiencers. But my point is that each one is unique. Each one is different from all the rest. Even though there are common themes, everyone is different. And so I want to encourage people to not discount the opening that occurred in their lives that they can't explain, but it was very comforting and loving, perhaps, because each one is different. So we mustn't judge ours compared to anyone else's.
That's such a good point.
Or think that we didn't have one.
Yes, yes.
I think many people do that don't realize it. And that was true for me for so many years. I didn't really know what had happened to me. I didn't talk to anybody about it because I never heard anybody else talk about any
sure.
such thing until, and this gets into your earlier question about IANs, until I heard Elizabeth Kubler-Ross give a lecture in 1980, and she talked about near-death experiences. And I walked out, I was so stunned. You know, it's like, oh, my gosh, somebody's talking about this kind of thing. And I know that those are true.
That is really special that you got to hear her, too, because she did amazing work.
It was very powerful. She was very humble.
Mm.
She mispronounced some of the English language words, and I totally trusted her and believed her because she wasn't pretending like she knew everything. She was only telling us these things that had happened to her patients that she was starting to understand. And, of course, the fact that something had already happened to me made me realize maybe I could start to understand what happened to me also. So I started going to IAM's meetings, not immediately, actually 15 years later.
How did you find out about IAM's?
I can't remember what brought it to my attention and why I finally went to one of the annual meetings. I lived in the Washington, D.C. area at the time, no. I was in Pennsylvania at that time, central Pennsylvania, and it was in Connecticut, Hartford. And, you know, I took a week off from work. I went up there. I attended the conference. And that blew me away because here I could listen to the people that had actually had these experiences. And they were telling me all these things about heaven, you know, that they asked God and Jesus about, and they got the answers. And it was incredible.
What year was that, Anne?
That was 1995.
Oh,
and
okay.
I can't say what brought IAMS to my attention at that time. But once I had been to one, I never wanted to miss another one. And you know why? Because not only was that part of me validated at that meeting that knows that there's something more, but I came away feeling so much closer to God, just talking about these things, listening to these things, acknowledging that God breaks through the veil, or we break through the veil and come back to tell about it, that we're not without revelation, if you want to call it that, coming from God, that we do receive every day. Someone receives something, probably. And it just, you know, it just really, I mean, I'm a Protestant Christian. I was raised that way. And this helped me so much to feel so much closer to God than I had for a long time. And after I felt so close to God, I also realized I could go to any church and it didn't matter, and that I could get connected with God in a church also, though sometimes there were things that didn't resonate with what I understood now and what I felt to be true that were said in churches, but
I was going to ask you if you were now actually feeling more of a sense of the love of Source rather than what they, you know, teach in Christian churches about, you know, an angry, vindictive God or what have you. You have had this experience that has impacted you with the love I would venture to say that you experience no sense of judgment or what have you.
Yes, I found that the theology that appeals to me the most is universalism.
Yes.
Because I feel so strongly that God has so much love for everyone, and that by humans focusing on judgment or, you know, what God would think of us, you know, or imagining that God is judging us and therefore we judge our children so they don't get in trouble, we judge ourselves for the whole rest of our lives, because of mistakes that we made. We judge other people as harshly as we judge ourselves. And I don't believe that that is what God put us here for.
Exactly.
That the purpose of life, as I've come to understand it by my research, is to learn how to love as fully as we possibly can and to understand love as fully as possible. And, yes, we learn a lot the hard way, too.
Yes.
And I don't have all the answers. You know, my life is not unfolding as a, you know, a perfect expression of God's love either any more now than it was before. But I believe that there's a reason for everything now, and that's one of the conclusions in my dissertation, that the near-death experiencers, that I didn't interview them personally, but they wrote their narrative at a time when they were alone and in a private place where they could spill out, you might say, all of the details of what really happened to them at that time when they had that mystical experience or that near-death experience. And they were generous enough to submit those to the IANS organization, to be part of their archives, to be made available to researchers like myself.
My NDE is in there too, but I don't know if it's buried or if it disappeared or what, but I remember submitting my account a number of years back. Well, I've been a member for only 10 years because I've only known about IANS for 10 years. But my big trans NDE is, of course, on my website, towardthelight.org. It's also on neardeath.com. It's on nderf.org. It's all over the place, and it's also been published in hard copy magazines, most recently called Pure Inspiration, and another one called Consecration, a magazine published in India. And so I'm very grateful that this information is circulating all over the world.
And thank you.
Yes.
Thank you for telling your story with an open, honest heart, you know, as sincerely as you can. Because these things are very difficult to talk about. They're difficult to describe.
Oh, very much so.
And I point that out in my dissertation. Mm-hmm. The difficulty of describing these experiences is repeated time after time, that on this earthly plane, in this dimension, we cannot conceive of what it is like in that other dimension where everything is love.
That's so true, because we're dealing with the duality and the polarity on this plane that unfortunately right now anyway is dominated by fear. This is something we are working on rectifying, however, because when we can raise our vibrational frequency into one of love, that's when we connect with Source and with our true selves.
Yes.
And the work that you're doing, the work that so many of us are doing, are helping to facilitate this raising of the frequency, moving back into love, back into the light. Now, what is it that you have been studying that prompted your writing of this dissertation?
Well, the thing that really prompted it was another life-changing experience that I had, which was a cancer diagnosis in 1988, after which I had two surgeries, and they said they got it all, but it was definitely a wake-up call at that point that I listened to, I might have had other opportunities to change my life completely, but when that one occurred, I did change my life completely.
Wow.
And within 24 hours of getting the diagnosis, I was talking to one of my sons on the telephone who lives in New York City, and I said to him, I heard come out of my mouth, I didn't premeditate this, and what I want to do with the rest of my life is help people deal with death and dying as Elizabeth Kubler-Ross has. And I could see in my mind's eye a book, and I knew that I was supposed to write a book. Well, I did start helping people immediately. I started volunteering with the Cancer Society, hospice, my church, at the local hospital. And I eventually started attending seminary and got a Master of Divinity degree and worked. But I did lots of volunteering in hospitals and hospices with people that were confronting their mortality, as I had. And in 2001, when I met Carol Parrish, who founded Sancta Sophia Seminary, which awarded me my PhD last week, I remembered the book that I was supposed to write, and I felt that getting into a PhD program would channel my energy into doing that book that I was supposed to do. And it did. She has created a very wonderful master's, PhD, and also classes to be certified as a practitioner and also to seek ordination within her denomination that she's founded, or her church, really, Light of Christ Community Church. And she has advisors in all of these programs. So nobody goes through their schooling alone. You meet with your advisor once a month through the whole thing. And I was in the PhD program for 6 years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And your advisor supports you and encourages you and lifts you up when you fall down. And is really a very loving person. The people that Carol has surrounded herself with and that she has trained are very advanced souls, you might say. They're very loving. They're very capable of sharing and supporting a person in many ways. So this program made it possible for me to write. It took me 4 years. But again, Carol Parrish had a near-death experience, so I felt that this was a place that I could write about near-death experiences. And the first week I was in the chapel at her seminary here in Tahlequah, Oklahoma, I knew that what I was supposed to write about was the continuity of love after death.
Very good.
And one of, therefore, one of my favorite findings is from listening to the near-death, reading the near-death narratives, and listening to the mystics and the three mystical traditions that I also brought in and compared with the near-death experiencer statements, my favorite finding was love never dies. Love is eternal, and if you love someone here, that love will still be there when you're on the other side. All the rest fades away. When you cross over to the other side and go through the stages of releasing everything, that was here on this earth, all that's left is the love. So I was very comforted to be able to demonstrate with near-death experiencer statements and statements from Kabbalah, esoteric Christianity, and Agni Yoga, the three mystical traditions that I investigated, to say that love is eternal and will not die. So, you know, people want to know, well, will that person be my husband on the other side? It's a little different over there. You know, you're not paired up the same way that we are here on Earth. But, so it's hard to explain.
Yes, yes. And one thing that I can say about that, though, is that no matter what, we are always linked up. It might not be a pair, as you were pointing out, because it's very interesting. During my transcendent NDE in the mid-70s, also from cancer, I still felt the profound love from the husband, but it wasn't coming from so much an emotional place or feeling attached or what have you. It was much bigger and broader than that. And in that form of love, which is more complete and more whole, doesn't dissipate or disappear. And in fact, it only grows because we're... You know, it's funny with relationships and loving people, whether it be a romantic or a family member or what have you, you know, because I love my daughter to bits, for example. Mm-hmm. But there's still an element of fear connected with that, you know, fear of loss, fear of rejection, or however that might manifest. So it taints the connection. But then once we evolve and transcend this physical plane, we know that that love, that connection, that communion with these other souls can never be lost. So it's important to make that point.
Thank you. That was a wonderful description of what the near-death experiencers say that I document in my dissertation. They repeatedly say that the nature of love over there is, first of all, it is a million times stronger.
Oh, yes.
Than what we know and feel here. It's just totally overwhelming. But they also say that it's an energy, a vibration, a force. And they tell us that everything is made from love.
Absolutely.
That there is nothing that God made without love, and there is nothing that does not contain that love. And, in fact, they say it's all made out of it completely, which my mind cannot grasp totally, that there is nothing but love. So I feel your description was very helpful in clarifying. And your statement about the fear, I have totally experienced that in my own life. You know, even the joy of giving birth to my children entails fear. Will I be a good enough parent? You know, will they be okay? The fear that something would happen to them. And, of course, this world of duality allows us to experience both sides of everything.
And I see that as a way of showing us what works versus what does not work.
Well, fear does not work, does it?
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't work, you know, and no matter how hard we try, until we get ourselves into the state of it's okay, whatever happened is okay.
You know, that has been my constant meditation, especially over the last few days, because there's just amazing challenges going on in our world right now. Amazing challenges that are going very, very deep and becoming more so every day. And then all of the personal things that we may be dealing with. And, for example, my daughter just left yesterday to go to Barcelona, Spain, to study for 2.5 months. And I thought, oh, goodness me, you know, she's going back, she's gone overseas and I'm in America, far away from most people who are close to me. And, mm-hmm. Yeah, I kept focusing on whatever happens, it's going to be all right.
And the joy, the excitement of her having the opportunity to be there is sometimes lost in our fears. Well, will she be safe?
You yes.
know? And can I support her? And so many things that we focus on instead of the joy of the opportunity, and even those of us who have had near-death experiences, myself not included, but I believe in them so totally,
mm-hmm.
we know that the transition from this side to the other side is just like walking or floating out of our bodies. It's no, there's no pain, there's no discomfort, there's no fear, there's no, it's easy. It's not hard.
It is so easy. And in fact, when we let go, I was just reading about a near-death experience that someone had yesterday.
I better finish that and say, and that what our loved ones will encounter on the other side is so much better than anything we could ever give them. So
yes.
I didn't
yes.
want to cut you off. Tell me about the one that you heard about.
Well, he was talking about, he was struggling with drowning.
Right.
But he was talking about as soon as he let go, the pain dissipated, the fear dissipated, he felt such peace. This is a repeated testimony. When people are struggling, because of course it's a part of the human condition to want to survive. And so there's this holding on that takes place, but as soon as someone lets go, it's amazing that the transformation that takes place. And that's all that I wanted to say about that, because it is really, really important that, you know, death is an afterthought, if the thought even occurs at all, because I didn't know that I had died, quote, quote, but I certainly did.
Right. It doesn't seem like all the horrible things that we've heard. It doesn't seem like the end.
No, it's just a shift.
One thing that I'd like to say is that the word death is misleading, because it makes it sound like there's no more life afterwards. But what do you call that experience if it's not life?
Exactly.
The people that go feel more alive than they've ever felt in this body.
Well, that is the truth. And in fact, I really make it a point to avoid using the word death, and instead I use the word transition.
I use that too, and I love the Native American way of saying they walked on.
Oh, that's beautiful. Because that's really good.
That's it. That's much more accurate. You know, they went beyond the body. They went to another place.
Do they refer to it as moving from the red road to the blue road? Is it something like that?
Well, the red road is the road in this life, the high spiritual path in this life. And I don't know what the blue road is, but I will investigate, because one of the things that I want to do is expand my research and also compare what Sufism, the mystical tradition of Islam,
yes.
has to say about love, and what the Native American tradition have to say about the relationship between humans and God, and if they say anything about love. Because I do believe that this is a universal higher truth, and that each religion is reflecting the same truth.
Well, what I'm seeing is what's really important is to drive it home, as it were, that we do not die, that we live forever, that death is an illusion, and really about overcoming the fear of death, because, you know, it's natural to be nervous about change. I mean, I would become very nervous moving house, and God knows I've moved house a squillion times over the years, and that's very unnerving, anything that points at a dramatic change in one's life.
That's a good example. I like your example.
Mm-hmm.
You know, death is sort of like that. It's like you've got to get everything in order if you have a chance, you know.
Yes, yes.
And you have to, like, figure out what you're going to do with everything. That's the earthly part of the experience. So it is kind of a little work. But once you are there, it's easy. You know, it's
yes,
like
it is.
You never have the move-in traumas of where am I going to put everything? Oh, this doesn't work. That needs to be painted. Any of that. You're helped. There are helpers there. The minute, even before you go out of your body, people see these helpers
coming yes.
to help them. You never go into the other world alone.
And that is a wonderful point to make out. And what's really beautiful about this is that I recently had Drs. Peter Finnick and Pim Van Lommel on this show.
Yes.
And they're so wonderful because they were both talking about DBVs, deathbed visions, and validating them. And that is the point where, you know, the one who's getting ready to transition actually does have the visitations from loved ones, friends, whomever, on the other side, ready to assist them over. And, you know, it's so interesting because last night I was thinking about it. You know, I've had these periods where I've been very much alone on the physical plane, but as soon as I popped out of my body onto the other side, I was immediately surrounded by all these loving beings. And so, I was thinking about all the myriads of people in this world who are looking at transitioning alone and feeling uncomfortable with that. But I want to remind people that maybe your physical body may be alone, but you never will be. And especially as you're getting ready to transition, you will not be alone. You're going to be so surrounded by beings who really love and care about you. And everything will just become self-apparent. That's according to my experiences and research anyway.
Yes, and when they get over there, they feel like they're home.
Yes.
They say, this is my home. I remember it now.
And when you had your experience, did you have that sense of home? Or was it still something that you were trying to get your arms around, as it were, and sort out?
I guess I felt more happy and at home in my own body,
mm-hmm.
having had that experience. I didn't feel as alone as I had felt before. I knew there was a force of love that put that into me. There was somebody that cared enough to give me that love, and they didn't identify themselves, and I didn't see or feel a being there. So I don't know who it was sent from. But one of the questions in my dissertation was, what was the source of the love that the people felt, those who did experience love. Out of the 480 that I read, 130 of them mentioned the love that they experienced over there. And that's 27%. It's even a higher percentage, 35% of those who had in-depth experiences, in-depth near-death experiences, transcendent experiences. Mm-hmm. And out of all of those, what was I going to tell you?
We were talking
the
about
source,
the love.
Yes, I'm sorry. I got lost in my statistics. It's easy to do that. The source that they said was the largest percentage associated it with being in the light, the light with the love. And some of them said the love came from God. Some said the love came from Jesus. Some said the love came from the light being that was there. One of them said everything that was there was a source of this love. And some would receive the impact of the love when they got into the light, and then a higher level of love when they met a light being, and then a higher level when they met Jesus. Not too many met God, but some said that they knew it was God that the love came from. So, you know, I quote from Emanuel Swedenborg, who is one of the mystical Christians that I investigated, and he talked about how everything over there is love more fully expressed, that there aren't any hurt feelings over there. There is no miscommunication. The communication comes into your mind from the other person's mind, and there are no errors in sending it.
And that's a good point, too, because there's been a lot of references to communicating telepathically and the fact that indeed it can't be misunderstood. In fact, even in my NDE account, I put that there are no errors put on. It's just very honest and straightforward, and you don't need to hide anything. Nobody's out to get you, kind of thing. And the communication is very pure in its essence. And it also stressed the importance of honoring and using that telepathy on this side, because this is what has really helped me in so many ways. In fact, my daughter was just saying, well, we're going to have to rely on our telepathy a lot more, because she's going to be focusing on only speaking Spanish, and we're not going to be using the phone much, and yet we're very, very telepathic, and we do trust it, and it is accurate. And so I'd really like to stress that to our listeners as well, is that when we do have the telepathic experiences, which can take place whilst we're on the other side or even on this plane, with people on this plane as well as with people on the other side, it really makes no difference.
Yes, and that those on the other side often are making every attempt to communicate with us, help us, to comfort us, to let us know that they're there, that they still love us, and that they are fine, that they are okay. In fact, they're happier, they're more beautiful, more perfect.
And I think it's important that we not second-guess ourselves when we're having these, or you know, receiving these communications from other sources, and not, oh, am I just imagining this? No, because it happens very differently than when we're just thinking about somebody. There's a different sensation that happens altogether when we're receiving the input. I call it input-output. When we're thinking about something, it's more of an output sensation. But when we're receiving input from someone, it's a very, very different feeling altogether. And it's so important that people trust that. We've just got a few more minutes. What would you like to share from the dissertation? First of all, how long is it?
Well, it's about 300 pages.
Wow.
I spend a lot of time quoting from the three mystical traditions, and I also include a large number of quotations from the near-death experiencers. But maybe just give you a little outline in 25 words or less of how it's organized. The basic conclusions that I drew are seven. I arranged them into seven categories. One, the true nature of death, which, as we know, is not what the common person understands yet today. Two, the profound impact of having a mystical experience and how hard it is to talk about it or to share it with other people when we come back. Three, the nature and source of the profound love. What is it really? Where is it coming from? Four, what are the qualities of this profound love? It's unconditional, compassionate, powerful, all-knowing, peaceful, and it's not intolerant of anyone, which is another way of saying unconditional.
Oh, thank you for that.
Number five, people talk about this unity and oneness that you alluded to, and they say they realize now everything is connected, everything is part of this greater source of love, this greater love, that we're all part of the same thing. And the last two are that everybody has a purpose here and talks about what that purpose is and what people understand it to be. And basically that is to know that love is at the core of one's own being, that everything that happens is for a purpose, even suffering, and that love is the purpose of life. And the last one, number seven, is love is how to live. And I talk some about the life review and how people come back and they realize that what they need to do is choose higher thoughts, emotions, vibrations, not only actions and words, but even thoughts, that they want to raise them up to a more loving level. And last but not least, love never ends. So I just wanted to throw out that those are my seven categories that I organized everything into. Thank you for letting me share that.
Oh, it's so wonderful, and it's critical that we have this information now, Anne, as you well know, because of all of the intense changes that are taking place globally, which unfortunately, if anything, are deliberately inducing more fear into the human psyche. And yet, the light is so powerful, no matter what, it is going to prevail in the end. The love is going to prevail in the end. And that's why I always make it a point to say that the only love prevails, because even as there is this climate of intense fear and foreboding, there's always these pockets of light that are going to burst forth and say, wait a minute, that's not the whole story here. That really is a lie. And, you know, it's like when a frightened child is living and having a nightmare, and then love steps forth and says, wait a minute, you know, that's not real. You're all right. You are loved. And then the fear dissipates,
yeah,
and the child is at ease again. Well, we're all children as long as we're living on this plane, as it were, needing to be reminded of how real love is.
And that when God's will is done here, as it is in heaven, we will all be partakers of love from every other source of love that there is, and we will all give it freely.
And I really believe that that is going to start to happen more and more. Again, once people can overcome the fear of death and realize that it doesn't even exist, as David Icke so rightly pointing out, fear for a lifetime of something that doesn't even exist. And we spend a whole lifetime fearing death.
Yes. Whereas our cultures could prepare us for this beautiful, sacred time where we focus much more clearly on what is really important, which is the love of the people that is around us and our love for them. It's really a very beautiful time, and that's why I love to work with hospice. People that are dying don't have any more pretenses. They don't have any more erroneous, you know, beliefs about things. They cut to the quick. Well, maybe a few. They cut to the quick. You know. They don't have much time left, and they're not going to waste it with things that aren't important. They're going to take care of their loved ones, and they're going to remember what is important.
Now, I will ask you, do you have any talks or presentations that you're going to be doing anytime soon that you would like to share with our listeners?
Well, my primary task at this time is to rewrite my dissertation. It only took me 4 years to write it the first time. I hope it's faster the second time, into a form that's more interesting for the average person to read, so that this extremely important information can get out to more people. So I appreciate your letting me talk about it. But my main task right now, and I'm open to talking if anyone wants to hear me do so, but primarily I want to get it into the written word so that I can get it to as many people as possible and share it. Would it be helpful?
Well, it sounds like we're going to have to sign off for this week. We've had such a wonderful, wonderful hour. And I want to say you've been listening to Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. Our guest is Anne Frances Ellis, who's written a wonderful dissertation on the profound love that is experienced through near-death experiences and related experiences. This is Reverend Juliet Nightingale reminding you that it is only with the heart that one sees rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye. Please remember that only love prevails. Next week we will have Gail Albury on our show, and I'm looking forward to talking with her again. And thank you all for tuning in. We will talk to you next week. Thank you, Anne, for being with us.
Thank
love
you.
And light to everyone. Signing off for this week on Toward the Light.